Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. Susan Guiasta will be joining us in the second half of the hour with a monthly report from the city of Ames. In the first half, we'll learn a little bit more about local responses and fallout from last week's round of executive orders coming from Washington, D.C. Busy week in Washington. You probably already know that one executive order issued by the new administration last Friday bars entry to the United States for residents from seven predominantly Muslim countries, including Iraq, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. The effects of this have already touched life here in Iowa. According to the Des Moines Register, the immigration ban impacts about 200 students at our three state universities. Of the seven countries identified, Iran has the most students in Iowa, with 100 at Iowa State University, 45 at University of Iowa, and 3 at the University of Northern Iowa. ISU reported that a visiting scholar from Iran who was scheduled to arrive last Wednesday canceled his visit, and an Iranian graduate student who had been admitted but not yet registered at Iowa State was also scheduled to arrive last weekend but was denied permission to board the plane in Stockholm. An Iranian postdoctoral in the School of Engineering who has been with the university since 2015 was initially not able to return to Ames, and Annette Hacker, spokeswoman for Iowa State, told the Register there may be others that they simply don't know about. Iowa State officials have been in contact with individuals that have not been able to come into the country, and the postdoctoral was eventually successfully able to come back to Ames. Deb Vance, who is the interim director of Iowa State University International Students and Scholars Office, announced the ban on the ISU website. She concluded her statement by saying, "You are valued and important members of the Iowa State University community, and we want to make sure you get the support you need at this challenging time." Iowa State University President Stephen Leith said in a statement on Monday, "Iowa State is proud to have enrolled a record 4,131 international students from 121 countries last fall, including 115 students from countries identified for the ban in the executive order." He said, "We welcome students and faculty from throughout the world who enrich the educational experience and enhance the research contribution of Iowa State. While we recognize the need for federal actions to protect our national security, we are concerned this executive order will unnecessarily interfere with members of our campus community, people who are core to our success as an institution of higher education and as a nation." What I just read from Stephen Leith were excerpts from his statement. You can find the whole statement at iastate.edu under news releases, and we'll post a link to that on our website at khoifm.org. In Des Moines, Drake President Marty Martin sent a campus-wide message on November 30th declaring Drake University to be a sanctuary, a place of refuge or safety for undocumented members of our community who now find themselves under heightened threat of investigation and deportation by the federal government. Protests against the executive order banning residents from Iraq, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Libya, and Somalia, and Yemen from the United States have been in the news from across the country this past week. One such demonstration, hoodies and hijabs, is being planned at Iowa State University for Thursday, February 9th. People are planning to meet in front of the Memorial Union at 11 a.m. this coming Thursday and march to the Free Speech Zone in front of Parks Library. Muslim attendees are encouraged to wear hijabs or attire that celebrates their religious and ethnic identity. Non-Muslim attendees are encouraged to wear hoodies as visible show of solidarity with their Black and Muslim communities. The march is described by the organizers as an opportunity for ISU students and Ames residents to show solidarity with those most immediately impacted by hate. It will focus on experiences of those students and scholars from the seven banned countries, Muslims, international students, refugees, and people of color. And on a note, they've asked that Americans and not Muslims be careful not to appropriate their culture by wearing hijabs and wear hoodies instead. Meanwhile, a rally to protest the immigration ban and the border wall occurred last night in Des Moines at the state capitol, followed by a march to the federal building. Two Ames residents were there and are here to tell us what happened last night. Welcome, Brenda Brink, and welcome, Suzanne Silver. Mm-hmm. Brenda, you were a parade marshal, in the march. What exactly is a parade marshal? And let's start out by asking you what that was.
Okay. And I'm from actually near Huxley. But
okay. I appropriated you.
Well, this was a true grassroots effort for this, and it was a phenomenal turnout. But because of the nature of being in grassroots, they did ask some more experienced people to help them with it. And so one of those was Jess Mazur, who volunteered. She's actually a staff member at Iowa CCI. Most people know CCI is very used to putting on safe and good effective rallies. So she asked, I think there were about 15 of us who were asked to be parade marshals. And what that is especially for something like this, where solidarity rally for people who are oppressed, not only facing discrimination in the United States, but all over the world, that they feel safe. So the parade rallies were white allies, and the white allies were asked to form a perimeter. We were marked with, of course, the usual safety vests. So we formed a perimeter around the rally, and then when the march started down to the federal building, we were all along the sides and, again, kind of a perimeter around the marchers to help them feel safe. We were not there to impose our white privilege, I guess you could say, but we were there to form a supportive group.
Was there any need for protection? Did you see any opposition to the march?
I did not hear or see of any at the first rally. There were actually two rallies, the second down at the federal building. I was toward the end when we were kind of rounding the corner to go back up after the second rally. We were on Court Avenue, so as you can imagine, there were people who had been in the bars. So there was one guy who came out of a bar, and this was when we were rounding a corner, and it was confusing to me because he was wearing a yellow vest, but his was apparently from working construction that day or something. So I was kind of confused by that, and then he made a very rude gesture at me. So I kind of smiled at him and still trying to figure out what's going on, and he was starting to say things that were obviously. So we're at the end of the of the march, and so we just kept going because a parade marshal is simply there to kind of protect the actual marchers. Mm-hmm. So we're not supposed to engage. We're supposed to be a shield. Mm-hmm. So it didn't mean too much. But
describe what exactly happened last night.
Well, we started up on the West Capitol Plaza, and there were a number of speakers, and I could not hear all of them that well, but we had, what, six or so speakers at that first rally? And they, of course, included the organizer, Nadia Ali, and the other organizer was Maha Tariq.
Do you know who they were, those people?
I don't know them personally, no. Mm-hmm. They are immigrants, Muslim immigrants. So they were speaking about just how glad they were to see the turnout because it was huge on such a cold day. It was amazing.
And it was really clear that the organizers were young adults, that it was a really wonderful coming together of immigrants and other people of color who are young and energized.
Very energetic. Mm-hmm.
Suzanne, can you describe the demographics of who was there marching?
Yes. Certainly there was, you know, an equal number of men and women. There were people from different countries and ethnicities. There was a young woman next to me whose sign said, you know, my boyfriend is from Iraq and I want him to be able to stay here. And there were young children. It was really cold, so some of the people with young children just had to leave before the march. I was wearing snow pants, so I could survive. And there was a meaningful moment of prayer where the Muslim participants did a traditional prayer circle, it appeared to be, before we actually marched. And so that it just felt like we represented America.
So it was immigrants, and were there Iowans marching there too?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Lots of people who appeared to be, you know, white or European American were marching. Mm-hmm. And so it just felt like a representational blend.
And I'd like to add, too, that even though there was the one gentleman and maybe another one that was yelling before he ducked back in a bar, you know, we had many more people along the parade route who were popping out of their eating establishments and bars and just giving lots of yells of support and clapping, and that was good.
So there was a positive feeling to the evening.
It was positive, and I have to say, it was one of the most energetic. I don't think there was any time where they weren't chanting.
Yes, yeah, that was very well done with the chanting. Lots of different chants and consistent. Yeah.
Were the chants in different languages or all in English?
All in English.
Yeah, so it's an American demonstration at heart. Can you tell us any more what you saw on the signs, Suzanne?
There were some signs that were like formal from like ACLU, like no human is illegal. And then there were some signs that I didn't understand of the Statue of Liberty and something about whether she stuttered or not. Do you know what that was about?
Yeah, so I saw like a handmade one, and then I saw some others that were printed. So it showed the head of Lady Liberty, and then it said, "Did I stutter?" Meaning, don't you understand what Lady Liberty stands for? You know, the quote, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. So there's no, you know, there shouldn't be any misunderstanding about that, but apparently there is.
Yeah, and some of the signs were just the chants. So, like, you know, no hate, no fear, immigrants are welcome here. And then, you know, my sign was more personal about that my father's family immigrated from Russia to escape the violence against Jews in Russia back in the early 1900s, and that I put no Muslim ban.
Is that is your family heritage part of why you felt you were willing to go out to Des Moines on a frigid night?
yeah, it was that, and also I thought about the refugees that have faced much worse physical conditions with much less good clothing than me. So I thought, I was a little worried I was going to get frostbite, but I thought, well, I can at least do this when they're suffering such physical deprivations.
So it was a way of connecting in a way to people that are having a much harder time right now.
Yes.
Why did you end up going?
Well, I feel very strongly that we are a welcoming world. There are only a very few people who seem to thrive on hate, and unfortunately one of them is our president, I feel. So I just felt a need to join in the solidarity to be the welcoming part of America, because that's who we are. I mean, there was even actually a mention by Alejandro, and I can't remember his last name. He's a pastor in Des Moines who is very active in the civil justice and injustices, and Alejandro made a point of talking about Standing Rock, and of course they were here first, so we're all one, and that's one of the most important things about Standing Rock, is that they had people from all over the world come there even though they are the most oppressed in the United States. So it's unity. You got to stand together.
There was a young woman, one of the first speakers at the federal building was a woman named Kenya, who is an undocumented immigrant. And she reported that she had shown up at the state house and spoke. And she was requesting that we make sure we have lots of presence at every bill hearing at the state house as much as we can, which I know is difficult for people who work. But I guess if we can... And one of the concerns is that we're not going to be given a lot of notice for when these things are going to happen to be able to show up, but to try to work it out so we can be there and let the legislators know that we take this seriously.
So one of the calls to action then, or where do we go from here, was to go to the state legislature and witness what's happening there.
And speak up, and to continue to call and write postcards.
Was there any other talk about where to go from here?
There's a website, which I haven't had time to really find out about, but I think it's actually a Facebook page. And so if you like that, they're going to try and make sure that things that are happening at the legislature get posted on there as soon as possible so people can try to make it down to the state house. And I like what she said about, you know, just contacting your legislators and let them know, because that is so important. They'll they'll know that people are watching, and you may think it doesn't do any good. It does a lot of good.
So the message was get involved, right?
Get involved for sure, and here's the legislature in session, so here's your prime time.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and thank you for listening in. We've been hearing a report on the march that occurred last night in Des Moines against the executive order from Washington enacting an immigration ban against residents of seven countries with Muslim populations and the border wall. Brenda Brink and Suzanne Zilber are here telling us their impressions. They went there from Huxley and Ames. Thank you for sharing your impressions and experiences with us.
Oh, okay. And I would like, if I can, to share what this Facebook page name is. I'm
sure.
Quickly looking it up. Okay, so it's, yeah, Nadia Ali, and or do you need to sign off? Or?
No, that's okay. Brenda, any last words while she looks that over?
Okay. Well, I was just feeling that the organizers of the march were almost overwhelmed with the turnout and so happy to see the support. And one of the chants that I liked the best was when they said immigrants built America. And it's true. It is so true. You may look down on any group. As history shows us, this is kind of the common thing, that whichever groups come over, you look down on them, whether it's Irish or whoever. But they're the ones that built America, and that's the ones that eventually became assimilated and yet kept their culture in many ways. It's what we are.
But how many people do you think were there last night, despite the cold?
I think during the rally, the initial rally, there had to be like 1,200 people, because a lot of them left before the march, and there were still, I think, a good 1,000 plus at the march. So,
Suzanne, any last words?
It's DSM, March Against Muslim Ban and Anti-Immigrants Orders.
On Facebook?
Yes.
Say that again?
So the letters, capital letters, DSM, March Against Muslim Ban and Anti-Immigrants Orders.
Thank you so much. I'm speaking with Brenda Brink and Suzanne Zilber, who went to the march. Brenda was a marshal at the march, which was kind of protection role at the march, and Suzanne went down from Ames, and Suzanne, you said this was, in a way, partly a continuation from your parents who came from Russia as refugees from violence against Jews. Thank you so much for your report, what you saw, and so thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. On January 24th, Scientific American wrote, President Donald Trump's administration moved quickly this week as officials at the Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, or USDA, emailed staff to inform them that they may no longer discuss agency research or departmental restrictions with anyone outside of the agency, including news media. Both agencies also told their scientists and other staff that press releases and external communications about taxpayer-funded work would stop until further notice. It remains unclear if these will be temporary or long-term policies. At the USDA, Department of Agriculture, a department-wide email from the chief of staff from the agency's in-house research office reportedly said that they would no longer release any public documents. Also on Monday, the Trump administration announced that federal contracts and grants would be temporarily frozen at the Environmental Protection Agency. The freeze on grants and contracts would affect core operations of the EPA, like toxic cleanups or water quality testing. I'm speaking with Jim Pease, who is a retired ISU professor from Natural Resource Ecology and Management and longtime Extension Wildlife Specialist, retired. And you probably know more than I do what else that means. Jim, thank you for joining me.
Glad to be here.
We're in a scientific community.
Yeah.
We are all about the sciences here in Ames. Help us break down a little bit what exactly this means. It's part of the fabric of how we think here.
It certainly is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Science is part and parcel of this community in Ames. And so certainly have lots of colleagues, lots of former students who are scientists working for a variety of these agencies.
When you were working at Iowa State, mm-hmm. did you ever experience any restrictions on publicizing your findings?
No. In fact, I did a lot of public speaking as an extension person, not only on public radio, but also in talks all over the state and nation. I never felt that kind of restriction.
This was a code of conduct?
It certainly is. It's called academic freedom. And we have that. People in this community and in this university have a very strong respect for science. We may disagree mm-hmm. about the conclusions or the interpretations of a set of data or something, but mm-hmm. we don't disagree about our right to share that and to make it public.
So this could potentially impact the culture at Iowa State, since so much money comes from the federal government.
Right. Yeah, and lots of universities are worried about that. Mm-hmm. If this holds for very long, it will be a serious concern. The role of science is to search out the truth of what's happening in the world around us. And that truth may come with consequences. In the case of climate change, it certainly does. And some of those consequences are melting the ice caps, the raising of sea level, lessening of UV protection, on and on and on. There are all sorts of potential consequences. And I think the public has a stake in that knowledge and mm-hmm. understanding that, scientists themselves, they're not allowed by order of the president to communicate even with one another.
With one another?
They're not allowed to send out emails. It's a gag order. And in fact, many of them are very wary of speaking even on their agency phones. Mm-hmm. I know of people right here in Ames who work for various agencies who will call me on their personal cell phones or on their personal email accounts, but they will not do it on agency accounts because they're essentially forbidden.
You're actually saying that some people already in Ames are feeling restricted.
Yes. For example, there are several federal agencies that are represented, USDA. We have laboratories here from the Soil Science Laboratory. We have agencies across the United States that are represented in every county. For example, the Natural Resource Conservation Service. Animal Disease Laboratory is mm-hmm. a federal agency. There are just a whole host of agencies that are represented, some of which have connections directly to the university and some of which do not. There are a lot of connections, and I think to silence them by direct fiat is just counter to everything that I think we as scientists believe. My understanding of his rule and the interpretations that have been made of that rule by various the heads of various agencies in Washington is that they're not even allowed to proceed with publishing papers in scientific journals. That's a bad thing for a free society. I mean, that is a blocking of information that we as taxpayers have paid the scientists to conduct, and they're not allowed to share that even across the scientific community. That's just unheard of. We don't know if it's going to be temporary or permanent, but the very fact that it was done has a very dampening effect upon people's willingness and mm-hmm. ability to communicate.
So, it's a chilling effect.
Right. That probably will last to show it's a shot across the bow of mm-hmm. scientists, mm-hmm. particularly government scientists. I think people will be afraid to say much, even if it's eventually withdrawn and goes back to normal communication.
What about the frozen grants and contracts? Do you have a sense of where we're going with this?
Well, it depends to what degree they enforce research grants and research contracts virtually across the university from a whole variety of federal agencies, NIH, NSF, National Science Foundation. Iowa State has lots of federal grants that mm-hmm. could be affected. For example, there are a number of graduate students at Iowa State that are on stipends that come from federal grants. Will those all be halted? Will they be able to pay their rent and buy food for their families? I don't know. There are lots of those as ongoing research. They're collecting data. Did they have to stop collecting data? And that was one of the things that was most disturbing about this, because it was mm-hmm. a political statement. A lot of confusion about mm-hmm. just what they had to stop doing and what they could do and couldn't do. The public should not believe anybody who says this is normal. It is not normal. This degree and the breadth of these bans are unprecedented.
Are you surprised by this?
I guess I stopped.
Mean, you're clearly shocked by it, but are you surprised?
No. Am I still shocked and angered by it? Yes. This kind of stuff mm-hmm. is not normal, and people should never believe that it is normal.
Are you worried that people will start to go along with this?
Yeah. If you say something that is patently wrong, patently a lie, you say it often enough, people begin to believe it. This is normal. If you say that often enough, people begin to believe it. This paranoid administration, I think, who is intent upon not allowing the public to have the valuable information for which we've paid for. If you look at the Trump administration's appointments, you have Scott Pruitt, who is Attorney General in Oklahoma. Scott Pruitt is not only a climate change denier, but he has very strong links to the fossil fuel industry. No problem there, except that he's, as a state attorney general, he received for his campaign lots of donations to his campaign from a variety, not only fossil fuel industries, but some ag industries as well, and subsequently prosecuted cases that were in their favor, basically at the behest of his donors. We have Rick Perry, who has been nominated for Secretary of Energy, again, one of the departments that he wanted to eliminate when he was running for president. So these are clearly, yes, they're political appointments. They always are political appointments. But instead of appointing people who are not only familiar with what that agency does, but may even be, in some cases, scientists themselves, or at least familiar with science, instead you have a complete political appointment whose goal it is to try to either eliminate that agency or dampen its ability to make regulations or do away with those regulations altogether. And there's been an attempt to normalize this, basically from mouthpieces for the administration saying, this is done every administration. Well, that's simply not true.
So they're saying this is routine.
Yeah, they're trying to normalize it,
and it's not routine.
That's not true at all.
It different?
Well, this is not only a broader step than has ever been done in my memory. This outright blackout of any data, any papers. You can't communicate by email. This is just essentially a gag order about science, way beyond what is normal. This paranoid administration, I think, who is intent upon not allowing the public to have the valuable information for which we've paid for.
And knowing what you know about the scientific world, can you speculate what the rationale is?
It's a gag order. Clearly, this is an attempt to silence the scientific community.
Are you aware of anything in particular that you feel the administration is trying to hide?
Certainly, the climate change data is one of the things. They've immediately removed the climate change webpage. It came down from the White House website.
The White House has a website.
They had a website.
And they had information about climate change
on
there.
Right.
And the environment.
Under the previous administration. So.
And the Environmental Protection Agency did. kind of information were they making available?
Well, it included everything from charts and data from around the world about warming trends, temperature trends, water levels within the oceans, melting of the ice caps, et cetera, all the kinds of things that science has collected over the last several decades that says that we've got some problems here, folks. Clearly, this is not normal behavior of any administration previously, at least not in the 20th or 21st century. The other thing is that certainly that he's trying to control the conversation. He's not the first one to do that, of course. Lots of people try to control what the conversation is by limiting either conversations of the people who are under you with other folks so that they can't communicate. But he's trying to control it even further by implying, I think, that science is inherently political. Mm-hmm. And science is not inherently political. It's non-political. Now, some will accuse scientists of politicizing it by trying to make the public aware of what their data means. That's not politicization. That is saying, hey, folks, here's what could happen as a result of the data that we've interpreted. This has certainly been a wake-up call for a lot of people in the scientific community saying, boy, we need to somehow find ways to protect ourselves. It's going to take us a long time to dig out from this, I think.
Well, it certainly isn't a new thing. I mean, scientific evidence has been suppressed for thousands of years.
Oh, yeah. You know, last time this happened, I think we called it the Dark Ages. Certainly there needs to be a greater respect shown for science. There's mm-hmm. been a long-running debate within the scientific community, I would say, for the last two generations about the degree to which scientists should be involved in political discussions. I would say we lose if we're not.
I'm speaking with Jim Pease, retired ISU professor from Natural Resource Ecology and Management and longtime Extension Wildlife Specialist, retired. You have discussed, at least, the idea of a scientist's march. Tell us what that means.
Well, the success of the Women's March on Washington, not only on Washington, but across the United States, hundreds and thousands here and abroad. And the spectacular success of that, I think, led a few scientists who were discussing this to propose, what we need is a scientist march on Washington, which sounds like it might be really boring, you know?
It sounds unprecedented.
Yes, graphs and charts or something.
Yeah, you
know, on our placards.
Some good signs.
Instead
potentially
of great
there.
Slogans that the Women's March has, placards with data on them or something. I don't know. And so this is actually planned. The date, I think, was released yesterday or the day before.
And who's planning it?
They're actually talking about having it on Earth Day, April 22nd in Washington.
And who's planning it?
That's a good question. There's a small group that started it. They put up a web page. People can find out a little about it by going to the web page. Not a lot yet.
And what's the web page?
It's www.marchforscience. All one word, no spaces, marchforscience.com.
Are scientists capable of getting angry?
In a few days, there were over 300,000 people signed up.
So scientists are capable of getting
angry. Absolutely.
So, again, how many people have signed up?
Over 300,000 interested in being a part of this in some way. And that was just after a few days. I don't know what it is today. And
are you
it's
thinking
not just
of going?
For scientists, but it's for people who believe in the validity of science and the positive role that science plays in our society. There's sort of a love-hate relationship the American people have with science. So whether this will have that sort of impact the Women's March had, I don't know. But certainly it lets politicians know that we're concerned.
Are you thinking of going to the march?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it.
Do you think there's a potential of a march here in Ames, since this is
I think there is certainly in Des Moines.
In Des Moines.
It could
mm-hmm.
be.
The Women's March mm-hmm. was greatly assisted by support organizations
right.
like Planned Parenthood. Are there scientific organizations that have that role in the scientific community?
There are scientific societies for every imaginable type of science. Associations of scientists, most of them have not to this point fulfilled this kind of political role. They don't have a role in politics. They have a role in science. This would be a very unusual role for them.
If somebody is interested in finding out more about this march,
the only way I know of is to go to the website, marchforscience, all one word, no spaces, marchforscience.com.
Thank you so much, Jim.
You bet.
I really appreciate it.
KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. You just heard an interview with Jim Pease, retired Iowa State professor in the Natural Resource and Ecology Management Department and longtime Extension Wildlife Specialist, retired. He was preceded by music by Rostock Band and followed by the same band. Rostock Band is an Iranian ensemble that collects records and interprets traditional Persian folk music. And what border guard could resist such music? Susan Guiasta is here, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, great to be here.
It's good to have you, as always.
Thank you.
What is happening with the City of Ames? We are headed into February.
It is February, the shortest month of the year.
Shortest month of the year.
Doesn't mean there's not plenty of things going on in the community. First, I just have an announcement to make. There had been a trout stocking event. The Ames Parks and Recreation Department partners with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources annually to stock trout at Ada Hayden Heritage Park in North Ames. That event has been canceled due to unsafe conditions. We don't want people on the ice because it is not as thick as they would like it for a large ice fishing event. So the trout stocking, as well as the family fishing event scheduled for this Saturday, February 4th, have been canceled. So I'm sorry for all those anglers that were looking for an opportunity to fish. We hope that the ice will freeze up and they'll have some opportunity later on this winter.
I was out there recently and I saw the area of water that the geese had open is relatively large.
Yeah, and it is. Lots of geese in that area
as
well.
A lot of swans swimming around in the open water.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, if people are staying indoors, I would certainly encourage them to get out and explore the parks. This is a really exciting time of the year to be out. There's all sorts of studies that talk about being out in the in recreational areas, in wooded areas, is helpful for your physical and mental health. And Ada Hayden is just a wonderful place to experience that nature, to get away from kind of the stressors of everyday life and to witness the wildlife that's out there.
The return of the swans.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So even though there's no trout and no family fishing event this weekend, certainly don't let that stop you from enjoying Ada Hayden Heritage Park.
Okay, what else do we have?
Well, it's going to be a busy month in February. Again, we have a meeting set on the Grand Avenue Extension Environmental Assessment. That is a mouthful. But I think a lot of people who have lived in Ames for a long time have been looking forward to progress on this project. This is a plan to extend Grand Avenue from Squaw Creek Drive, or most people realize this intersection as where the Lincoln Center Hy-Vee kind of dead ends into South 3rd, 4th Street there. This will continue Grand Avenue south all the way to South 16th Street through the Coldwater Golf Course. And it will also extend the South 5th Street into South Grand. So it's kind of, it may be difficult for people to visualize. So we have this great map at cityofames.org where you can see the Grand Avenue extension, what it will look like. And this meeting that we're holding is a public hearing on the environmental assessment. So this was a document, it's over a 100-page document on the impact that this extension will have on the natural surrounding areas, as well as it actually looks at socioeconomic and cultural, natural environment, and physical resources that would be impacted by this project. Documents are available online, and then there'll be a public hearing from 5 to 7 on Thursday, February 9th at the Ames Public Library. There'll be a brief program at 5:30. So if you're curious about this project, what it might look like, and maybe have some feedback about it, make sure to attend this meeting from 5 to 7 on Thursday, February 9th, or go on the website, cityofames.org/Grand Avenue, just Grand Ave. Grand Ave, there's a page where you can click on a link and provide comments that way as well, because we know not everybody can make the meeting. And you can see maps and additional information. Big, big project, long time coming. People are really looking forward to this one. Some other things, if you were thinking of a way to volunteer and give back to your community, just remember the deadline for volunteers being sought to serve on city boards and commissions is 5 p.m. for Friday, February 17th, and we are kind of a stickler on that 5 p.m. So at the close of business day on Friday, February 17th, before that time, please complete an application if you're interested in volunteering your time to serve on a board or commission. Those would be things like the Library Board of Trustees, the Parks and Recreation Commission, the Public Art Commission. There are 18 different commissions. I think almost every single one of them has a vacancy. It is possible that somebody who is on the board could be reappointed, but certainly take a look if you have a passion for a particular area and just want to get involved. This is a really great opportunity. Meetings tend to be once a month. Maybe a little bit more frequent for some groups, a little less frequent for others. But all the information on when they meet and where they meet is on the website.
Are there any qualifications required?
So some of the commissions have areas of specialty. Sometimes we're looking for tradespeople, such as on the Building Board of Appeals, or some of our more technical boards may need somebody with a law background, but it tells you that on the website. So a lot of them don't require anything, anything other than a willingness to serve, mm-hmm. and an interest to give back to the community. So I can't even, you know, mention all the different boards and commissions, but I can tell you that if you have an interest in a particular area, it's probably represented by one of those boards or commissions. And it's a great opportunity to be able to voice your thoughts and provide feedback in a way that's meaningful. It goes back to the city council, and they consider that when they make decisions. So it really can have an impact on the community.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a very simple application available on our website, cityofames.org. Look for the boards and commissions navigation under the government tab, and you can fill it out online. If you don't want to fill it online, you can download the form and turn it in. You can stop into the clerk's office, request a form, and fill it out right then and there. But we are looking for good people, and this is the time of year that people will be going off boards. They'll cycle off. Their terms will expire, and some of them will not be allowed to be reappointed. Most of the terms have a two-term limit, so mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We definitely will be needing people. Some other things. We have some other deadlines coming up as well. We are looking for nominations for Historic Preservation Awards. This is a program that recognizes historic preservation activities, including work on building exteriors, site work, and notable contributions to preservation in Ames. You know, Ames has a lot of history. And I'm just going to put in a plug for the Ames History Center. If you've never walked in there and looked around, there's always interesting exhibits. I would say that I grew up in Ames, but I didn't have a very good understanding of the history. And I think that although that was being sort of collected and preserved, I think only recently have I seen this kind of interest in really trying to collect that information for future generations. History is really playing a big role. We are starting to pay more attention to history, I think, in the community, and I think that's great. The Historic Preservation Awards is another great way to recognize those contributions. You can review the nominations and the applications on our website. You know, that website is just filled with information.
And these are awards for buildings or events?
So,
or
it is, it is for preservation activities, so the building exterior, site work, and notable contributions. We do special awards like historic landscapes, architecturally compatible new additions or structures. I've seen actual buildings, residential homes, people. Hmm. There's a lot of different possibilities. So there's several different structural awards as well as special awards that are possible. They're not always awarded each year, mm-hmm. but if you have an idea.
And the award, what does the award result in?
You get a plaque.
Plaque, uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's just a nice recognition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to put in our landlord, Dennis Jones, for restoring the Ames Fantorium.
This is a fabulous building, mm-hmm. isn't it?
It's
great.
Beautiful.
When you walk into these older buildings with the high ceilings, the exposed brick, and you see the loving care that has gone into restoring them, it's really impressive.
Yeah.
I have spent a fair amount of time recently looking through old photos of Ames and have been just struck by how much the Main Street area has changed. Mm-hmm. But yet seeing that as I drive past the Sheldon Munn today, seeing
big
that
changes.
Yeah, seeing that work go back into restoring those facades, mm-hmm. it really is important. And that attention and respect mm-hmm. to history, you know, these buildings, once they're gone, we don't have them. They won't come back. So, and they're built to last. So, but I also understand that there are some times and situations where if the building's not sound, you know, sometimes they do have to come down, and sometimes that's an opportunity. I think the library, the Ames Public Library, is a fantastic example of how you can respect the history and the tradition of the past, but you can add to it. Mm-hmm. Ursula, I think you're from Ames as well.
Yes, I am.
So when you look at that library, I remember the old library mm-hmm. that I used to come in off of on 6th Street.
On 6th Street, that's right.
I remember the addition.
Yeah.
The addition in the 1980s.
Absolutely.
And you can still see parts of that. Mm-hmm. And then we have this brand new, renovated, modern, mm-hmm. sleek design of the current addition. And
right.
they all sort of work together in harmony. It's really a... the whole building, I think, just encapsulates that feeling of tradition working together and the respect for history.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think I still remember better the way it was when I was a child, when you came out on 6th Street.
Yeah, yeah. And up the stairs.
Up the stairs.
Or you can go down the stairs. Yeah, it was, it's fun. And to go, you can still go in that old section. So, yeah, another plug for the library if you haven't gone in there recently.
And Campus Town is having a facade grant
yep.
program as well.
Isn't that what perfect seg into the, Campus Town, building facade program. That is actually based on the success of the, downtown facade program, where we have incentivized people to do that restoration. The Campus Town building facade grant program provides up to $15,000 in matching funds, to an investment by a Campus Town building owner to, renovate the facade, to improve it. I think there was a period in time where a lot of facades were covered by tin and lumber, and in a sense that actually kind of preserved the facades behind them. It was, I think, an effort to make them look more modern, but over time they just sort of looked dated. That didn't really stand the test of time. As we've seen with the Sheldon Munn, you kind of peel back those layers and you see those improvements. So that was a very successful program in downtown Ames. That has been extended to Campus Town. So if If you're a campus town building owner and you're interested in a facade grant, those applications are due by 5 p.m. on Monday, February 27th, and they are looking specifically at maintaining the diverse culture and uniqueness of campus town, creating a vibrant and walkable campus town, increasing safety, security, and investment in the facades by the property owners. And there's an idea book or some suggestions on our website that sort of show what kind of improvements would be eligible for this grant. In the downtown area, they're really interested in the history and kind of
going back to the original look.
Yeah, yeah. Going back. Mm-hmm. In campus town, it's a little different. Some of the buildings perhaps are not as old. Some of the buildings may not have that opportunity for the facade improvement. Have you been on Welch Avenue recently?
I have.
Okay, so maybe you've seen Arcadia?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, that was just a new and unique approach to the facade. They have a way to sort of extend their dining space sort of onto the sidewalk in a way where they can open the windows and interact when the weather warms up. I'm really looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. They were a facade grant recipient. Mm-hmm. You'll see West Street Deli, also not on Campus Town area, but west of Campus Town, also received a facade grant. And you see the different improvements, opening the buildings up, making them more visually appealing, more friendly. They have an impact on safety. They can improve lighting. Mm-hmm. So,
and speaking of Arcadia, the block just west of Sheldon.
Mm-hmm.
Has come down where Arcadia used to be.
Yeah.
And
there's a large development plan for that building, that block between Sheldon and Highland. And they had closed a lane of Lincoln Way that should be done today, actually. So doing some work in the right-of-way. You know, that block will be undergoing some really rapid transformation mid-February. You should see more demo of the buildings in that area. By the end of the semester, we will start reconfiguring the traffic right around there because they will need to go into that first lane of traffic. So once school is over at Iowa State, you'll start seeing a different traffic pattern at that corner of Sheldon and Lincoln Way. And so And it will be a different traffic pattern for about a year.
A year.
While that block is being redeveloped. So a lot of changes and a lot of improvements.
Susan, we're running out of time. One more thing, the bike summit?
Yes, we have a bike summit coming to the Ames Public Library on Friday, February 17th. The Ames Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, that's our own AAMPO, will be involved, and from noon to 5 at the library. Come. It's a come-and-go kind of opportunity to learn more about biking in Ames.
Okay. And President's Day?
Oh, just a reminder.
The 20th?
Yes, Monday, February 20th. Remember, City Hall and most city offices will be closed for President's Day. That does mean free parking. Wherever there's a meter, those will not be enforced. That's a holiday that often surprises people.
Okay. Thank you so much, Susan. It's always really interesting to hear.
Well, it's fun to be here.
Yeah, Ames is an active town, and you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been hearing from Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Earlier, we heard from Brenda Brink and Suzanne Zilber, Ames residents and Ames and Huxley residents, who attended the march in Des Moines against the immigration bans and the border wall. And we heard from Jim Pease, retired ISU professor and scientist, who spoke about the meaning and effects of the ban on scientists' public communication on research at the USDA and EPA and describing the beginnings of a scientist march on Washington planned for Earth Day. I have been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And we also heard music from an Iranian group called Rostock Band, playing traditional Persian music. Remember that Local Talk is archived at khoifm.org. So if there's anything you want to hear again, you can find it there, khoifm.org. We're also streaming live, and you can find information and links about things we spoke about today. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., and you can also hear it online at khoifm.org. Remember that Local Talk is a training program as well as a production show, and so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, come on down. We'll train you, and you can join the Local Talk team. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.